Let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 16. 2 Samuel chapter 16. So, Absalom is coming to Jerusalem, has all the hearts of the people. They've already proclaimed him to be the next king. Oh, by the way, if you need a Bible, raise your hand. We have guys that are just so want to give you a Bible. It's pretty awesome. So, they're looking at me going, hey, right here, got him right here, hey. It's pretty hard to miss. I tell them to do that, though, because I forget quite often. So you know, Absalom's coming. So David hightails it out of there. He knows that the hearts of the people are with him now. He stole the hearts of the people, we read in chapter 15. And so David leaves, and it says in verse 1, when David was a little past the top of the mountain, that'd be the Mount of Olives, by the way, there was Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, who met him with a couple of saddled donkeys. On them, 200 loaves of bread, 100 clusters of raisins, 100 summer fruits, and a skin of wine. So we're going to show up here the map real quick here of what's going to be happening here. So my little handy-dandy pointer here, Jerusalem, Bahurim, right here, as we're going to be talking about it. Dave is going to eventually go this way over the Jordan, up this way to Mahanaim. And then next week we'll get into in chapter 18 or so when they're going to have this battle here in the forest of Ephraim. Okay, so when we're talking how he goes out over this mountain, it's Mount of Olives, because Bahurim here is about maybe a mile and a half from Jerusalem. It's east of the Mount of Olives. And so, hey Frank, go ahead and leave that up there so people can kind of see that as we're saying, you know, different places, so you can kind of see the close proximity of everything. So, Saul's grandson, Mephibosheth, the actual lame, we're not being derogatory here, he was actually lame in his feet, the son of Jonathan, to whom David had showed kindness for the sake of Saul's son, Jonathan, who was David's best friend. When the king was headed east across the Mount of Olives, he was met by Mephibosheth's servant, Ziba, Ziba, who out of gratitude to David for his past kindness towards him, now provides the fugitive king donkeys, provisions for his journey as he's kind of getting out of Jerusalem. And so the king says to Ziba, what do you mean to do these? So Ziba says, the donkeys are for the king's household to ride on, the bread, the summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine for those who are faint in the wilderness to drink. And the king said, and where is your master's son, meaning Saul? And Ziba said to the king, indeed, he is staying in Jerusalem, for he said, today the house of Israel will restore the kingdom of my father to me. So what he's saying is that Mephibosheth is basically on Absalom's side, and so he is no longer with David. He's now with the king that's coming in. This is a lie. As we'll find out in chapter 19, Ziba comes feigning appreciation for David, and David is the one who rewarded Ziba earlier for making known that Jonathan had an heir that he could show favor to. And he says, so now I want you to go and I want you to serve Mephibosheth. So verse 4, so the king said to Ziba, here, all that belongs to Mephibosheth is yours. And Ziba said, I humbly bow before you that I may find favor in your sight, my lord, O king. So later on in chapter 19, we're going to see that Ziba deceives Mephibosheth. He says, hey, I'm going to saddle up a couple donkeys so we can go out and see the king and provide from these provisions. He's saying, great. And so he saddles up the donkeys and he just takes them. Okay, and Mephibosheth is lame in his feet. There's nothing he can do. He can't run after him. He can't, you know, finally make his way there to counter anything. And so he gives them the donkeys that they were going to saddle up to go see David with. And the question is, why is Ziba doing this? And he's very, very shrewd. He is hedging his bets is what he's doing. He doesn't know that at this point that Absalom's really the stronger of the two foes. And at the same time, he's not sure that David is going to come back either. So he goes out there and he feigns allegiance and let me give you some provisions, because if you guys go to battle and you win and you come back into the city, he's going to look awesome. He's going to look awesome. And yet, he goes back into the city. He goes back to Jerusalem. So when Absalom shows up, it looks like he's there to support Absalom. So it's a very, very smart thing to do on his part, in a very worldly sense, to say the least. So we read on, now when King David came to Bahurim, there was a man from the family of the house of Saul whose name was Shimei. So looking up here, you can see he hasn't gotten very far. He's just like right there, just on the little east of the Mount of Olives. And so he hasn't gotten very far at this point. And he's met by another guy. This guy's name is Shimei. And so there was a man from the family of the house of Saul whose name is Shimei, the son of Gera. Coming from there, he came out cursing continuously as he came. And he threw stones at David. And all the servants of King David and all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. And also Shimei said thus when he cursed, come out, you bloodthirsty man, you rogue. The Lord has brought upon you all the blood of the house of Saul in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom, your son. So now you're caught in your own evil because you are a bloodthirsty man. So David is just barely outside the city. He hasn't gone probably more than a couple hours at the most, maybe just an hour. And all of a sudden he comes across this guy named Shimei. And Shimei is basically saying, you're getting your just desserts. You know, you were a violent man and Saul's blood is upon your head. And it's like, dude, you don't even know the facts. Okay, I did not kill Saul. Okay, well, Ishbosheth should have been the next one. Well, you know what? He was killed by traitors, and they weren't my traitors, and I ended up killing them. I had nothing to do with the household of Saul being removed. But he doesn't care who's right and wrong. All he cares about is how he feels. That's it. I don't know about you. I've come across quite a few people, and okay, I can admit, every now and then, I might go based on how I feel as opposed to what I really know. And it's called venting. And this guy is venting. He's had this pent up for years. And so he's just releasing this upon him. And I love Abishai's response. Then Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Please, let me go over and take off his head. I love Abishai. And I love to have guys around me like Abishai. Because there's a lot of things that if I'm feeling attacked or somebody is verbally attacking me or whatever, doesn't like what I'm doing, and they're kind of cutting down how things are being done here or whatever, to have someone like Abishai just say, you know what, you just need to, and then, you know, might lay into him a little bit. To which then I could be, you know, the godly saint, there. You know, don't just hold on. And yet that's exactly how I'm feeling. But because they said it, I don't have to. So now I get to be the godly guy who says, oh, you know, settle down. Let's just let God do what he's going to do. We'll just kind of give them over to the Lord, her over to the Lord. Let them say what they need to say. And so Abishai is that way. I can be that way when it comes to certain people. You know, I feel fiercely loyal to my own father-in-law. I'm fiercely loyal to the people here on staff. And I would probably be that Abishai to them. Because say whatever you want to me, just don't say anything about them. Definitely be that way with my wife. There's no way in the world I would let anybody get away with that. And I would be more the role of Abishai with that than I would be King David. And so there are those roles to play. But there's something about when someone says something that you really want to say, and then after they say it, you feel good that someone said it, but at the same time you're going, yeah, I'm glad I didn't say it because that's kind of sin. But you know, and you're kind of going, oh, but that was kind of, oh, yeah. So that's kind of how you are kind of here with Abishai. He just wants to take care of that guy, you know. But the king said, what do I have to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? So let him curse, because the Lord has said to him, curse David. Who then shall say, why have you done so? And David said to Abishai and all his servants, see how my son, who came from my own body, seeks my life, meaning Absalom. How much more now may this Benjamite, meaning Shimei, let him alone, let him curse, for so the Lord has ordered him. It may be that the Lord will look on my affliction, and the Lord will pay me with good for his cursing this day. Shimeis are very tough to have in your life. I know, because I've had one for years. For years, this guy would call up, he'd leave messages on the church phone line, usually drunk or high, say what a bad fellowship we are. You should take, when we were Horizon Christian Fellowship, you should take fellowship out of your name, you know, and what a lousy pastor I was. And this guy did this on a pretty regular basis. Then he'd show up to church and just glare at me, you know, And then I would reach out to him. I would minister to his broken family. We gave him money. We helped him any way that we could. And yet it still wasn't good enough for him, and he just did nothing but complain and about us. And the people in the fellowship would say, why do you let him come here? And my response is, where else is he going to go and hear the word of God and that people would actually put up with him? I said, I don't think there's another fellowship on the face of the earth that would put up with him. But we know who he is. We've come alongside. We've gotten this far. We kind of know how he acts, and we kind of know this and that. And unless he does something criminal or threatens somebody here in the church for safety reasons, he's going to continue to come here. And we're going to let him do that. And then something happened, and he could no longer come there anymore. But Shimeis are great in that God allows them. And he allows them because they're there to actually humble you whether you like it or not. It's almost like the Lord saying, you're not that wonderful. Check out this guy. You know, you think you can minister to everyone? You can't. And so don't think you're all that. And there's always going to be your critics. There's always going to be your detractors. But here's the thing. Can you love them? Can you love them and show them mercy when they deserve none, pretty much like, well, us? So it's tough, but sometimes necessary. David sees God has allowed him, and maybe God will see his affliction and repay him with good for being so patient with this guy. And so as David and his men went along the road, Shimei went along the hillside opposite him, cursed as he went, threw stones at him, and kicked up dust. We're going to come back to Shimei later on chapter 19. We're going to track his life and find out where he eventually ended up and things like that. It's pretty fascinating. But just briefly, I want you to go to Esther, chapter 2. In the book of Esther, you know that we have Esther who becomes queen to the king there, Ahasuerus. Esther is a Jew. Haman is the evil high-ranking political advisor to King Ahasuerus. And Mordecai is the one who raised Esther. And so Mordecai is a Jew. And Mordecai is the one that spoke into Esther's life and said, look, you're in a position to go to the king about Haman's evil plan of wanting to destroy all the Jews. And how do you know that you weren't, what, created for such a time as this? Great quote from God's word. Well, the interesting thing here is in Esther chapter 2, verse 5, in Shushan, the citadel, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of J.R., the son of Shimei. What? If David had allowed Abishai to cut off that dead dog's head, I don't know if we would have had Mordecai. I don't know if Mordecai was born before that or after that. It seems like it'd be more after that because it's a couple generations. We wouldn't have Mordecai, you know. On the same note, we also wouldn't have been having Haman, who is an Agai, Agag from the king Agag from the Amalekites, if Saul had done his job and killed the Amalekites. You can't outthink God. God's will is going to happen no matter what. And even though Saul's being disobedient, even though David is being gracious, we're still going to have this situation in Esther where God gets to show his glory. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. The reason I bring this up is because in Ezekiel 18:20, it says, the soul who sins will die. Shimei is responsible for Shimei. The son shall not bear the guilt of the father, nor the father the guilt of the son. So no matter how evil Shimei is, and you might have somebody in your background that was actually notorious, shamefully so, that is no reflection of you. But I'm of their seed. I'm of Satan's spawn. No, you're not. I read a book these last couple of months, and it's a book that I really encourage you all to read. It's been my favorite book probably in the last couple years that I've read. It's called Redeemed, Unredeemable. Just came out in November. And it says, when America's most notorious criminals came face to face with God. So they talk about two of the Manson followers that were very prevalent in the murders, Susan Atkins as well as Tex Watson. Talks about David Berkowitz, son of Sam. Talk about Jeffrey Dahmer, all these different guys. and Carla Faye Tucker, I think, in Texas, and how these people came to know the Lord in a crazy, crazy way to where they're doing ministry this day, where at one point they are, what is it, the word I'm looking for when you're a criminal and you can't feel anything, a sociopath, thank you. Sociopath, and they say that sociopaths can't feel anything, and so they don't know right from wrong and all this stuff, and every single one of these people were labeled as a sociopath at one time. And then when you're alone in your cell, trial's over, there's nothing to distract you anymore. The horror of what you've done comes upon you, and Satan has no need for you anymore, and you're alone with the horror of what you've done. It's amazing the guilt and everything that kind of comes and falls upon you. And then when somebody reaches you with the word and the Lord Jesus Christ, what God can do with that. Like Son of Sam, the murderer in New York, now has a ministry called Son of Hope. And he's been doing that for like 25 years. Every time he comes up for parole, he says no because it would do too much damage to the families that I hurt. He chooses not to be paroled, even though some of those family members have forgiven him because he has ministered to them. And it's just unbelievable stuff. One after another. So, Charles Manson. Talk about Satan's spawn. He had a child who was about 12 years old at the time that he conducted this notorious murder spree. He didn't do too well. Later on in life, he also sired a child when he was like 18 or something like that. Was never in this child's life. And then he ended up taking his life later on in a suicide. And meanwhile, his son, which would be Charles Manson's grandson, grows up and takes on his mother's maiden name, and his name was Jason Freeman. Jason Freeman spends a little time in jail, and he also became an MMA fighter for like 12 years or so, and used the name as a hook, Charles Manson III, in order to make him look tough, and people would want to fight him and just kind of be that name. He comes to know the Lord. He now has a ministry called Frontline Warriors, where he is ministering to at-risk youth and has been doing it for like 10 years now. And meanwhile, he has made contact with his grandfather, Charles Manson. And for the last 2 years, he says, every time I visit him, we talk about two things and two things only, Jesus Christ and my family. And he says he's not a believer yet, but he brings it up all the time. And he asks for us to pray for him. What? Redeemed. Unredeemable. You're not responsible for your father's sins. And I don't care what kind of stock you came from. I don't care how notorious or shameful your parents or grandparents or where that came from. That does not define you at all. And Mordecai, what a hero he is, even though he had a despicable grandfather by name of Shimei. And Jason Freeman, what a godly man he has become, and yet he has a notorious grandfather by name of Charles Manson. God's grace is bigger and mightier than any sin, and that's why it's called Amazing Grace. Awesome. I just love that. And so I really encourage you to get that book. It just is incredible. It's just a great read. Verse 15, it says, meanwhile, Absalom and all the people, the men of Israel, came to Jerusalem, and Ahithophel was with him. And so it was when Hushai the Archite, David's friend, came to Absalom, that Hushai said to Absalom, long live the king, long live the king. Now, I don't think he is being insincere at all. I think when he's saying that, he's thinking of David. Remember, he's David's friend. He wanted to go with David. David said, no, go back and counter Ahithophel's counsel. And then David prayed, turn Ahithophel's counsel to foolishness. You know? So he goes on and says, so Absalom said to Hushai, is this your loyalty to your friend? Why did you not go with your friend, meaning David? And Hushai said to Absalom, no, but whom the Lord and this people and all the men of Israel choose, this I will be, and with him I will remain. Furthermore, whom should I serve? Should I not serve in the presence of his son? As I have served in your father's presence, so will I be in your presence. Yes, he's going to serve in your presence, but as he serves in your presence, I would again submit to you, he's really serving David. So here it is that Absalom asked for Ahithophel, which, by the way, means brother of folly. Now, why do you think His name means brother of folly. And I would again submit to you that Absalom was Ahithophel's folly. Ahithophel chose to partner up with or become a brother to Absalom. And that was his folly. And so his name means brother of folly. Because his advice is awesome. And the advice he's going to give here is the advice that Absalom should have followed. His advice is impeccable here. And as we read this, we're going to find out that to appeal to a man of passion, you need to appeal to his feelings. But to a man of reason, reason. And Absalom is not a man of reason. He's a man of passion. So, Ahithophel says here, Absalom said to Ahithophel, give advice of what we should do. And Ahithophel said to Absalom, go into your father's concubines, whom he has left to keep the house, and all Israel will hear that you are abhorred by your father. Then the hands of all who are with you will be strong. So they pitched a tent for Absalom on top of the house, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all. What else happened on the top of that house? That's where David, in his lust, watched Bathsheba bathe. And so more lust is going to take place on the top of that house. Seizing a king's concubine, sleeping with them was equivalent to seizing the kingdom. If you can't even take care of your family, if your wives, you can't take care of the kingdom. In the early stage of rebellion, no doubt, some might be thinking that maybe David and Absalom can work things out. By Ahithophel telling Absalom to do this, there's no chance in the world David would find his son detestable, and there'd be no chance at all of reconciliation taking place. And so, taking Ahithophel's advice, Absalom does this. He pitches a tent on top of the house for all to see. He parades the concubines in and out that tent so they know what was going on there. Verse 23, now the advice of Ahithophel, which he gave in those days, was if one had inquired at the oracle of God, Ahithophel both with David and with Absalom. So when it says here, the advice of Ahithophel, which he gave in those days, was as if one had inquired at the oracle of God, it doesn't speak of meaning it's virtuous. It just means it's very shrewd like the oracles of God. He's speaking metaphorically, was as if. He's not saying it was. He just says was as if. And the way that he spoke was so shrewd, it was like the oracles of God. So, chapter 17. Moreover, Ahithophel said to Absalom, now let me choose 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue David tonight, and I will come upon him while he is weary and weak and make him afraid, and all the people who are with him will flee, and I will strike only the king. Then I will bring back all the people to you. When all return except the man whom you seek, all the people will be at peace, and the same please Absalom and all the elders of Israel. So, Ahithophel's advice is very, very good. David didn't have time to really muster an army at this point. He's going to be very tired and exhausted. We know he has women and children with him. 12,000 men should be more than enough to pursue him, overtake him, scare off those who are with him. They will flee, and so it would only be leaving the king. Might leave more than just a king. Maybe 100 or 200 mighty men will stay until the death or whatever, but the majority will flee. It'll be very quickly to fall down upon him with 12,000 men. I'll bring back all the men with me. All those who fled from David will come back as well. It'll be very minimal bloodshed, to say the least, and you will be able to be Absalom, the father of peace, which is what his name means. It's very good advice. To have a civil war end within a day with only a few casualties is much better than risking a long, drawn-out war to where the people are going to weary of you and be embittered towards you, saying, this guy's our king and we've been at war now for months, maybe years. And it was very, very good advice. It was the best advice. Verse 5, then Absalom said, now call Hushai the Archite also and let us hear what he says to do. And when Hushai came to Absalom, Absalom spoke to him, saying, Ahithophel has spoken this manner. Shall we do as he says? If not, speak up. So he wants to hear from Hushai, and so Hushai says to Absalom, the advice that Ahithophel has given is not good at this time. I like the way he's not being combative with him. He says, good advice, just not now, is what he's saying. So he continues to speak, and he's going to give his advice, and you're going to notice the imagery, the pictures that he paints to make them afraid, and then the picture that he paints to appeal to Absalom's ego here. So, and that's going to be much more appealing to a vain man, much more powerful and stronger influence to a vain man like Absalom. So, verse 8, "For," said Hushai, "you know your father and his men, that they are mighty men, that they are enraged in their minds like a bear robbed of her cubs in a field, and your father is a man of war and will not camp with the people." You know David, you know your father, you know the mighty men that are with him, you know that these are men that have experience in battle, and they're not going to David's not going to be camping with the people, that they're going to flee and he's going to be right there. Surely by now he's hidden in some pit. He's in a cave somewhere. He's someplace where you can't find him, or in some other place. And it will be when some of them are overthrown at the first that whoever hears it will say, there's a slaughter among the people who follow Absalom. So basically, what he's saying here, if you just start taking on some heavy casualties and you flee, nobody's going to be confident in ever following you in battle. You know they're enraged. They're experienced warriors. You're not just going to drop in on them, and this isn't going to be a quick thing. It's going to be a very, very bloody thing. And maybe the 12,000 that you have are not going to have the stomach for it. And once they start seeing hundreds of their fellow soldiers start dying, they're going to flee. They're going to retreat. So Hushai puts fear in their hearts. And he says, "And even he who was valiant, whose heart is like the heart of a lion, will melt completely. For all Israel know that your father is a mighty man, and those who are with him are valiant men." So he puts the fear of God in their hearts, puts the fear of David in their hearts. "Therefore, I advise that all Israel be fully gathered to you," not to Ahithophel, "from Dan to Beersheba." So we're going to get a much greater army, "like the sand that is by the sea for multitude, and that you go to battle in person. So we will come upon him in some place where he may be found, and we will fall on him as the dew falls on the ground, and of him and all the men who are with him, there shall not be left so much as one." Let's get a bigger army. Let's have them gather to you. You lead them in battle instead of some old geezer like Ahithophel, okay? "And after the slaughter, you'll be known as a great warrior." This is appealing to his flesh, his ego. Bigger army, yeah, bigger army, and that'd be great. And there's going to be less, you know, chance of me dying with a bigger army. And yet after that great slaughter over David and his mighty men, man, everybody's going to think I'm the dude. "Moreover, if he has withdrawn into a city, then all Israel shall bring ropes to that city. We will pull it into the river until there's not one small stone found there. If he's in a city, he's trapped. Everybody's going to know where he is. You'll be able to even gather more people to come behind you. Pull that city apart stone by stone. Either way, it's going to be a tremendous victory. And people are going to be talking about that for centuries to come. What a great warrior you are." You can almost see Absalom's eyes light up as this advice really appeals to his ego, his vanity. "So Absalom and all the men of Israel said, 'The advice of Hushai the Archite is better than the advice of Ahithophel. For the Lord had purposed to defeat the good advice of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring disaster on Absalom.'" So God did answer David's prayer that Ahithophel's advice would be turned to folly. His advice wasn't folly, but it was heard as folly by Absalom. "Then Hushai said to Zadok and Abiathar, the priests, 'Thus and so Ahithophel advised Absalom and the elders of Israel, and thus so I have advised. Now therefore send quickly, tell David, saying, do not spend this night in the plains of the wilderness, but speedily cross over, lest the king and all the people who are with him be swallowed up.'" So what he's saying is that, look, Ahithophel gave advice. Here's what he said. This is what I said. Now the king Absalom seems to want to listen to my advice, but let's say he changes his mind. Don't camp over here. Don't camp in the plain. Get up, go. Cross over the Jordan. Get out of Dodge. So, it says in verse 17, "Now, Jonathan and Ahimez, stayed in Rogel, for they dared not be seen coming into the city. So a female servant would come and tell them, and they would go and tell King David. So remember, Jonathan and Ahimaaz were sons of the priest, and so now Zadok and Abiathar are going to go tell them, but they don't dare go into the city. They're stationed in a place, so they're going to send servant girl instead. And so it says, nevertheless, a female servant would come and tell them, and they would go and tell King David. Nevertheless, a lad saw them and told Absalom. But both of them went away quickly and came to a man's house in Bahurim, who had a well in his court, and they went down into it. So some sort of a cistern is in the house. And so then the woman took and spread a covering over the well's mouth and spread ground grain on it, and the thing was not known. And so when Absalom's servants came to the woman at the house, he said, where is Ahimaaz and Jonathan? And so the woman said, they have gone over the water brook. And when they had searched and could not find them, they returned to Jerusalem. Now it came to pass, after they had departed, that they came out of the well and went and told King David. Said to David, arise and cross over the water quickly, for thus has Ahithophel advised against you. So again, there's still a possibility that maybe he'll go back on that, think about it, and want to take Ahithophel's advice because he advised against you. Yeah, this should kind of remind us a little bit of Jericho and the two spies, you know, that Rahab hides. So the king of Jericho was deceived by a woman, and here we have Absalom also being deceived by a woman who hides two men to be able to go speak to the king. And then in verse 22, it says, so David and all the people who were with him arose, crossed over the Jordan. By morning light, not one of them was left who had not gone over the Jordan. So they hightailed it out of there pretty good. Now when Ahithophel saw that his advice was not followed, he saddled the donkey, arose, went home to his house, to his city, and he put his household in order, hanged himself, and died, and he was buried in his father's tomb. Why did Ahithophel do this? I would submit to you that he's not being some big fat baby head because his advice wasn't taken. I would submit to you that he knows that Hushai's advice is going to destroy Absalom's army. And I think he knows that because he's following that advice, that Absalom's army is going to get wiped out. David's going to come back. And what is Ahithophel going to have left? He's going to be executed for treason. So in his mind, there's no win here. There's not even the possibility that Absalom is going to win and he can stay on as being an advisor. So he just hangs himself and he dies. In a couple of the Psalms, it talks about about this, as we went over last week, about that my friend in my own household, comes against me, and that he goes and hangs himself later on. And again, it speaks of David is like the person of Jesus Christ as a type. Here he has a friend in his own household that betrays him, and it's treasonous, and then he ends up going out and hanging himself. That's exactly what happened with Jesus and Judas, you know? So, going on in verse 24, it says, then David went to Mahanaim, and Absalom crossed over the Jordan, he and all his men of Israel with him. So you could see right over here that now that they have gone across, and they're over here at Mahanaim, and they crossed over this little river right here, and so Absalom is now following them up in that area. So now they're on the other side of the Jordan. So, he goes on and he says, and Absalom made Amasa captain of the army instead of Joab. This Amasa was the son of a man whose name was Jithrah, an Israelite, who'd gone into Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, sister of Zariah, Joab's mother. So these guys are cousins. Joab, who is the captain of David's army, and Amasa, they're cousins. And so this is also David's nephew that is going to be the captain of the army over with Absalom. So Israel and Absalom encamped in the land of Gilead. And so you see Gilead right here. So they are camping around here somewhere. So this is where we are. And then it says, now it happened when David had come to Mahanaim that Shobi, the son of Nahash from Rabbah, of the people of Ammon, Machir, the son of Amiel from Lo-Debar, and Barzillah, he's this big dinosaur dude, obviously, So we're saying Barzilla. So the Gilead from Rogillim brought beds and basins and earthen vessels and wheat and barley and flour and parched grain and beans and lentils and parched seeds, honey, curds, and sheep, and cheese of the herd, for David and the people were with him to eat, for they said the people are hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. So David knows he's going to a place where he has found favor. Now, Shobi is probably the brother of Hanun. Now, Hanun was the son of Nahash, that when David went to offer condolences when Nahash died, Hunan is the one that treated those ambassadors shamefully, and so David, you know, went to war with him, beat them, and so obviously raised up someone else in the stead of Hunan. And so Shobi is probably the governor that David put in charge of that region. And so now Shobi probably is indebted to David. And so they have some sort of good relationship there. Makir is a son of Amiel, dwelling in Lo-Debar. Well, in 2 Samuel 9, 4 and 5, we have a wealthy landowner who's protecting Mephibosheth. And so until he finds out the friendly intentions of David, he has been the one that has been taking care of Mephibosheth. And so because of that relationship, they have a relationship. So David goes to this area where there's Shobi, there's Makir, and then Barzilla, that dude. We're going to find out later on in chapter 19 that he's so grateful for David. But being an old man of 80 years of age, he declines the invitation to come and live with David once David gets the kingdom again. So he's going to a place that is very friendly towards him, that owe him, that they've had a relationship, and they come out and they feed him and his army. It's going to strengthen him. We're going to find out by the time of chapter 18, many more people have come out to be with David as opposed to just the 600 men that we saw last week. He's going to have people over thousands, captains and over thousands and hundreds. And so we're talking a few weeks, if not a month, has taken place by the time they probably go to battle. And that was enough time for David to muster an army and be very well refreshed in the way of being provided for and things like that. And so so we're going to end there and just open up for any questions that you might have.